This week on the show, Motrin gets a headache. Will our president-elect Twitter? And the online video cat is out of the bag. All this on This Week in Media, episode 115. Hey there, boys and girls. We are back with This Week in Media. I'm Daisy Whitney, your host. You can find me on TV Week and New Media Minute and blah, blah, blah. But you know all that already. We have a full house today. I'm here in the studio and everyone is here in the studio. So it's like party central and I am surrounded by Max. I didn't even turn my computer on.
It would be so embarrassed.
My computer would be totally embarrassed right now because everyone else has their Macs and they're open and they're shiny and pretty. And my PC would be like, I'm not working. I'm dying. I'm falling apart. I'm so embarrassed in front of all these Macs. So you hear Alex. Alex Lindsay is here as usual. Thank you, Alex, for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Next to Alex, because this is really important for the listening audience, is how we're lined up around the table, is Martin Sargent.
Daisy, what a pleasure to be here.
And Martin is
I had absolutely nothing else to do now that I'm unemployed.
No, how should
we? Oddly enough, it's very easy to get Martin on the show now.
He was, so can you be on every week, Martin?
Sure. But I was wondering, how are they going to introduce you? Martin Sargent of
SargeWorld.
SargeWorld.com. I've updated once in a year and a half.
And will you be updating it regularly
now?
Yeah,
I'm actually having a whole redesign done right now. So
it's going to be wild. We also have David Rewald here of Viz Media, who just returned from Tokyo. Good to have you back.
It's great to be back.
And thank you, as always, for the goodies. Everyone should know that David takes very good care of us. He's distributed tea and allegedly dried persimmons, was that it? Or pomegranates or something?
Strange snacks from Tokyo, let's just say that. We still have to identify most of them.
All right. Well, I've got the Pokemon books, so I'm taking those home to you-know-who. And Susan Bratton, the lovely Susan Bratton, thank you for joining us. Susan is with Personal Life Media, a network of self-empowerment podcasts.
Don't say it like self-empowerment. You know you need some personal empowerment, Daisy.
Oh, I know. I totally do in so many areas. So I've got a number of interesting things to discuss. But first, I have to let you all know that we're not going to be able to discuss Quantum of Solace because, sadly, I am the only one here who went to see it this weekend.
So wag
of the finger, as Stephen Colbert
you
would
didn't
say.
You didn't assign it to us.
But you should just go. You're media people. You should be seeing that. You should be going out and seeing the big movie.
I did read.
Sarah Lane tweeted that she fell asleep twice during it.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
She's
probably hungover, though.
That's right. It's very distressing.
Narcoleptic.
So I'm going to discuss it with myself for a minute. And I certainly welcome listeners' comments.
Daisy.
So let me tell you what I thought about it. So everyone should go see it because, you know, just you should go see it because it's a big movie and it's an important movie. And it's not as good as Casino Royale. And it's a complicated story. But basically, if a movie doesn't involve talking animals, it's complicated to me on some level. So I just kind of accepted that it was going to be...
There was no talking animals?
There were no talking animals. What happened with that movie for me, and I'm a woman and I'm a straight woman, was at a certain point I just kind of... I sort of slipped away from the story and I just said, the story's too complicated to follow. I'm just going to focus on the suits that Daniel Craig is wearing. And
how
that,
was that
got
for
me
you?
Through. It just was all I needed. It just kept my attention. I was like, you know what? I don't get what's going on. Land, water, oil. You know what? Who cares? I'm just focusing on watching Daniel Craig wear his clothes. So there you go. That's all I have.
Would you have really moving women forward
on that comment.
There wasn't enough. There wasn't enough of Daniel Craig not wearing his clothes. Hey, I believe in equal opportunity objectification, don't you, Susan?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
All right. So that's what this is all about. So last week there was the new TV conference in San Francisco. Many of us were here. Susan and Martin were there. I was there for a little bit. So I thought we could start and talk a little bit about that. What were some of the hot topics? Susan, what was the buzz there? I was there in the morning. I went to the Hulu session, but spent most of my time kind of in the halls talking to people, grabbing people for interviews. So what were folks talking about there?
Things, I think a couple things. People liked Jason Kilar's presentation.
Really? Now he's the CEO of Hulu.
CEO of Hulu. So they really liked him. They liked his personality. There were a lot of speakers who were a little deadpan, and yet what shone through for me the most was that there's a lot of passion and energy around what I call web celebrities, and the whole idea of web video, the possibility of monetizing it, the fact that it's still a free-for-all around how these shows are going to get monetized, but that there's a great belief that there's a big opportunity there. I spoke on a session about monetizing content, and it was still very interesting that the room was packed, but people were still struggling with basic concepts like CPM. They wanted CPM explained to them, and I'm happy to explain that six times a day whenever anybody needs it. But there's still a big disconnect between the producer community and an understanding of how content gets sponsored. So that's something that I think there's a lot of energy around still. The only other thing that I saw as far as new TV was this idea of just distributing it everywhere, taking your content, no matter who you are, and putting it every possible place you can put it as fast as you possibly can, and picking your partners and just getting it out there online, on television, on demand, on whatever, mobile apps, etc. And so there's a scrambling around that.
Okay, so that's how people are approaching it?
Yes.
Do we believe that's a good idea?
I don't.
Alex. Okay, and why?
You do or you don't?
I don't.
You don't.
No, I think that there's a few things. As a small producer, I mean, we're not a big company with lots of people and everything else. You know, adding a lot of overhead to make sure that we get to every single outlet and manage how it looks in every outlet and make sure is a huge time suck per show. And I'm not sure if it makes that much sense. In the early days, we put it in a bunch of different places, and we found that still, and this was early, you know, before YouTube really blew up, but we found that, you know, still 92-93% were downloading on iTunes. You know, and so the I do believe in branching out over time. The problem is you don't get chart position on anywhere if you put it out everywhere. So you're better off, you know, like we... If we post something on iTunes, it doesn't take that many views. It takes surprisingly few number of views per day to get into the top 10, you know, of the tech area. It takes maybe 5 or 10,000 a day to get into the top 20 overall of iTunes. And that can be done if you focus a lot of energy and you figure out how you're going to market it. But if you put it on iTunes and every other place in the sun, you end up in number 80 on all of them. And the thing is that chart position gives you street cred. You know, people, it gives you, more people will watch it because they see that it's in the top. You know, people who are interested in tech and they go into a certain part of iTunes and they go, oh, these are the best tech shows right now. I'm going to click on a couple of them to see what's going on. They won't, it's very hard to, you know, the viewability in iTunes, for instance, drops off dramatically after the top 100 and really off after the top 25. So you need to be able to figure out ways to get into that. And it's not that hard, but if you put it everywhere, it becomes very difficult. You know, I don't think it's important. Chart position is not necessarily important in every service, but with iTunes it is. And so what we like to do is focus people towards one service first. And then we begrudgingly make it available on the web, you know, on our own website. Mostly because,
but we don't want to drive people there.
No, we'd much rather drive them to iTunes.
Right. Whenever I put out a URL for the show, I always send it, because then the whole point is you can do other things on iTunes too. You can subscribe
right,
to it.
Right.
I don't know if we can do that on our site. I mean, really. I would imagine. I mean,
they can get an RSS feed, but it's much easier for the average person to get it on there.
Now, what if we were to take iTunes out of the equation for a moment? Because look at something in October, Seth MacFarlane released his comedy show on the web, and that was through the Google Content Network. So that, I don't even know what the specific sites were that was syndicated to, but the whole point was that kind of had that super distribution strategy of just pushing it out everywhere, much like with an AdSense ad, and that achieved 14 million views in 3 weeks. Okay, it's Seth MacFarlane. That's fine, well and good. But even so, isn't there some value in pursuing that type of strategy?
If you're a big name, yeah, because your name is going to be enough to get you everywhere. If you're not a big name, you just have to pick and choose your battles. If you spend half your time figuring out distribution, as opposed now, there are great, you know, TubeMogul is a great way to get stuff out to a lot of places without that. The problem with a lot of these places, and this is less important to some people than it is to us, is that I like to control a lot about how my video looks. You know, I think that YouTube bashes it, Blip bashes it,
I think that some of the other ones, Vimeo is probably a little bit better, but I think that, that there's a lot of heavy compression because people are protecting their servers, they're making sure that it plays back quickly, and a lot of things that aren't as important to me. What I really want is it to look nice and clean. You know, and so so we also like to have distribution partners. Now, the problem with that, of course, is that we're then paying for bandwidth. You know, so.
So, Martin, as you contemplate what your next venture is, we're presuming that you're going to be back on the web very soon with a fantastic new amazing show. Now, talk about some of the things that Susan discussed that were being discussed at New TV in terms of, you know, opportunities to monetize and to partner, where to distribute. Now that you're going to be coming at this without being an employee, coming at this just solely as a contractor, as an independent producer, what are the things that you're thinking about and contemplating now, and how do you weigh them?
Well, I'm not sure yet if I'm going to be an employer, if I'm going to go independently. I'm probably going to try to work with some of my former colleagues, such as Sarah Lane, Jace Bean, who I have a wonderful working relationship with. And I think, you know, Sarah and I have never done a show on screen before, and I think that it would really sing. As in terms of, you know, what people are kind of looking for, it seemed like a big buzzword at the conference was this branded content. And a lot of the people that I talk to, as I'm pitching shows to them, say, yeah, we would love to have you part of our network, but we have to assign an advertiser to it first. We have to get an advertiser on board your show before we can do this. This is one of the things that I'm doing with Revision 3 right now with WebDrifter, which hasn't been officially canceled, and I'm still working on a consultant basis with Revision 3. If we can get a good sponsor, brand the content with WebDrifter, WebDrifter will have a second season. So that's one of the things I'm working on.
Is there a time frame for that you want to have? I mean, have you given yourself a time frame? In 2 months, I want to have a sponsor lined up?
Well, you know, I'm basically working on like a 2-month consultancy with Revision 3 right now. So whether that's the time frame or, you know, if 6 months from now, if Ford says, yeah, Ford's going to do it.
GM might want to give you some money.
We really want to sponsor a road show like WebDrifter where you're traveling around the country.
Of course, you know, we can't afford ABC anymore.
How about Toyota?
Toyota,
last car company standing.
Anyone. I'll take anyone. I can mold a show around any sponsor.
Are you doing the kind of the sales legwork yourself some degree?
No, or what will I'm you doing still right now is building the proposal for what the second season of WebDrifter is. So that then the fantastic sales team at Revision 3 can then take it out into the marketplace and see if we can get a sponsor attached to it.
Well, it's interesting. You know, Susan and I had lunch before the show, and Susan runs her own business, and I mean, really, for all intents and purposes, I do as well. I mean, I'm a contractor and have been for 10 or 12 years, and I sort of think about the idea of getting paid for what you produce. I mean, that's what I've always, as a reporter, I've always been paid on a, you know, per story basis or whatever. I mean, the specifics are not necessarily important, but that's how I've been paid. And I'm wondering if more so that's the model we're going to see. I mean, that's what you're experiencing a little bit already, Martin, is that I don't know if it's paid for performance yet, but in a way, it's the ads are going to have to come first. And I guess are we entering a new, is 2009, given the broader economic climate, given the things we've learned already specifically in this microeconomy of web video, I wonder if that is going to kind of dictate how the next year ahead looks, that it's going to be more of the money has to be baked in from the get-go.
I think it's difficult to get the money baked in from the get-go, frankly, unless you have a track record of, you know, being a serial entrepreneur in the, you know, web video world or whatever it might be. Unless you have that proven track record, it's going to be very hard for a marketer to want to put budget against something that they don't know is already successful. And the price of tools and technology coming down so far that almost anyone can be in the production business means that there are so many people out there chasing after those dollars already that it's more often than not that you have a hit. And then George Ruiz at ICM picks you up and he markets you to the big brands for integration and things like that. So I'm not sure that
it's possible to do it that way.
You could spend a year going after a couple of different brands and hope that one will say yes, or you could just get out there and start producing the content yourself and become successful while you're pitching the brands, which is my advice, because decision cycles often take a long time unless you have a personal relationship.
You're also figuring out how it's actually going to work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that there's a lot in our production pipes that have changed over the last 3 years of producing, and really over the, we started doing web video in 2001, you know, serial web video in 2001. And so and a lot's changed, you know, both in the technology available to us, but also in how we approach it. You know, we really look at ways to make it much less expensive, much more scalable, repeatable. You know, these are all things that, that we worry about a lot, and a lot more than we did when we first started.
So, Martin, would you do a show without... Let's assume WebDrifter, happy days, wonderful, comes back and is hugely successful. Would you start your next show with Sarah without
any
partner? Like, would you guys, if your ideas done?
See, the thing is, if you're really serious about this, if you're passionate about this sort of thing, you have to do a show.
Yeah.
It's not a question of getting paid to do a show. It's I mean, I've been doing shows now for 10 years. I have to continue to do a show. I need the positive reinforcement.
Are you missing that? Are you from
your ego craves
from a creative standpoint? Do you find yourself?
Yeah, I'm very narcissistic, very egotistical. I need fan mail. I need direct tweets. I'm being perfectly honest. I need to, you know, I need people saying good things about me on the forums.
I would say
plus that's okay. I just also, you know, really, really enjoy doing shows. I mean, it's a great joy in my life, you know, beyond all the stuff I was just joking about and the family and everything. This is what I do. This is what I love to do.
That is true. When I see talent and I'm considering different people to do shows on my network, I always look for that drive. If I always joke, some of my hosts, they shot out of the womb with a mic in their hand and they are driven to do it. They won't fade on you. It's their passion. And those are the people who get sponsored.
Yeah. And those are the people that we saw featured at New TV, you know, and I was one of the people who selected these breakout video stars along with Barrett at UTA. He's an agent at UTA, sort of like Georgia ICM. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of the people that I chose, once you start talking to him, for example, you follow Michael Buckley on Twitter, who does What the Buck, it's amazing. You get a sense of how hard this guy works, how driven he is. I mean, this guy is working 24/7 on this show. And it shows because it has become phenomenally successful. And I think the same is pretty much show for all these people. Felicia Day, always working on the Guild, you know? All of them. Gary Vaynerchuk, we all know how passionate he is about
Never sleeps.
He never sleeps. Right. I mean, that's really what you have to do, though.
So, David, let's hear from you for a minute. So, do you see, you're inside a media company to some degree, so you have a little bit of a different perspective. Does this hard work pay off? I mean, we'd like to believe it, right? That's the American dream, but does it always pay off?
Well, it's interesting listening to Alex's comments and, you know, talking about how we distribute and where we distribute. You know, we have at Viz, for example, a number of properties. Some are a mass property, probably 3 or 4 of them. But then there's 20 or 30 other properties that are niche, small, you know, but great content, actually better content than the mass content in most cases. You know, something like an Urasawa's Monster, for example, which is a title that it's about a serial killer. You know, that's not going to reach Cartoon Network.
Let's hope not.
Anytime soon, or even Adult Swim, for that matter. But, you know, so that's the type of approach, you know, using Alex's advice, we would take with a title like that, is we'd narrow its distribution to a core audience, to a core distribution channel, to get that ranking and to do those sorts of things. You know, something like a Naruto or a Bleach or, you know, a big title, we do want it everywhere because so much of the consumer products business is dependent on the extended reach of eyeballs and broadcast in all forms. You know,
it's a numbers game still.
It really is a big audience. If you know, Namco Bandai is going to go make the next, you know, Naruto, you know, video game for the Sony PlayStation, the biggest number they're looking at is what are we doing in television broadcast and what are we doing, you know, in addition to that. And that dictates the amount of money they pay us in royalties and minimum guarantees and all of that. Even when we go to retail with our books and or manga and the anime DVD content, the number one thing those buyers ask is it on television? Is it stripped? All of these questions. That's really what they care about. And, you know, one of the things we're trying to do on the digital side of things is augment television broadcast, which is trickier and harder to get in when you have limited time slots and changing directions and strategies by, you know, the Cartoon Networks and things of the world, and go, okay, well, depending on what I will or won't negotiate with those people, I'm going to have a solid digital broadcast plan that's going to, you know, reach the eyeballs I want to reach the fan base, and augment whatever we're doing in broadcast that does change all the time. I mean, you might have a great time slot one month, and the next month, you know, they change it till something that's
to give you, Friday night, like Lipstick Jungle, and cancel it.
Exactly, those kinds of things.
Not that you're bitter or anything.
I never even watched those.
So it's actually quite interesting. We've got to employ all of those strategies across the board with a number of properties, depending on what it is and where it fits. You know, if I'm going to launch a niche title, I certainly think I would start with a very limited distribution channel. Maybe it's a Hulu or a Juiced, and then maybe only iTunes for download.
Do you feel, David, going forward, I mean, looking into 2009, I mean, certainly what people have been telling me for various interviews is, you know, there's going to be more. I mean, VCs say they're going to be scrutinizing business plans much more. I mean, advertisers, I think, are going to be doing the same, making sure there's a return on investment. Do you feel, when you think about sort of the digital properties at Viz, and I know this is not all your bailiwick at the company, mm-hmm. but do you feel that there also is going to be a little bit more ruthlessness, scrutinization, whatever you want to call it, going forward?
It's difficult for us at Viz because most of our properties, if not all of our main properties, come from our licensors in Japan, who are in a completely different place digitally than we are. I mean, for example, iTunes over there is just not a big deal. Their networks and everything, cellular-wise and or wireless-wise, are also much more advanced than ours. They watch TV on their cell phones, a lot of broadcasts.
All I got to say is, the hotel I'm going to, 55 megabits per second.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I was thinking of taking some extra drives and downloading the internet.
Yeah. Just for
use
so
in somewhere else. Just to do a little, every night I just download another chunk.
It's amazing. I mean, they sit there and they'll watch television on their wireless phones. And they have basically, you know, like TiVo on their wireless phones. So the concept of downloading content just so you can put it on your portable device doesn't really exist like it does.
They don't have to. They're just streaming it essentially, right?
It's there all the time. So we have to always
carry that out here.
Yeah, and then what we have to really do, I mean, to the scrutiny that you're speaking of, is we have to explain to them why we have to employ the strategies in the U.S. that we have to employ, which is difficult for them to understand because it's like, what do you mean you iTunes and you got to download it? And
it's a whole different world over here.
We're third world to them. You know, it's kind of humorous.
Hey, Martin, how did you pick some of the people that were on your list? You named some of them already, the 10 breakout web video stars.
Some of them were folks who have shows that I'm fans of. Some are just people who entered my radar over the past year and have become extremely popular that I may not be fans of. For example, Fred. You know Fred on YouTube? He's one of the most popular YouTube stars.
You're like
out
5
there.
Million views a video.
It's unbelievable. But you watch this show and you figure, how could anyone sit through an episode of this show?
This is the helium.
The kids love it.
And, you know,
kids these days.
Watching Fred during the conference being interviewed up on stage, he was great. You know, he really thinks this stuff through, and he's very smart, and he was very entertaining.
He's a 15-year-old guy.
He's a 15-year-old kid who I'm just too old to understand is what I finally figured out. I went back this morning, and I tried to watch a few episodes of Fred, and I still hate it, even though I really like him as a person. The show is just not for me, and maybe I am too old to be working in this space now.
We're getting rid of you. Casting you aside.
It's over.
Now. So, what do you think are the business lessons from these people that others can learn? Though, let's talk about takeaways. I mean, it's, you know, you sort of talked about how you pick them, but if you were to look at some of these people, what the buck? I mean, I just want to point out this: some of these folks are having success with partnerships with big media. I know sometimes this makes our listeners crazy when I mention the big media world, but hey, listen, they have money, so don't look down at big media
now. So take advantage of it.
Right, take advantage of it while you can. He has a deal with HBO.
He does.
Fred has a deal. I don't remember who it's with, but he's got some sort of affiliation with a movie studio for advertising.
Michael Buckley also is doing work for E! He used to do work for Fox News. He's also making pretty good money on YouTube, and really, if you listen to him, that's the center of his media universe is still YouTube, because that's where his career started, and he says he's never going to leave that. At heart, he is still a YouTuber.
All right. So
whether you can make a lot of money, I'm talking to some executives at YouTube about my career at the event. You know, unless you're a Fred or a Michael Buckley and you can get these massive numbers of numbers, I don't think it's probably something that you're going to want to bet your kids' education on, that you're going to be a YouTube star.
Okay, so then how do you make money with online video? I mean, Susan, that was, you know, you walk in there, that's one of the topics. All right, so you either have to have massive views like a Fred or Michael Buckley. Okay, and let's assume that's not going to happen for most of us. You have to, you know, do something that's much nichier, like what Alex does, very specific, you know, branded entertainment type of deals, or have some kind of partnership perhaps with big media. Are there other things that we're not thinking about right now?
The only other thing besides some level of sponsorship where an advertiser pays to put their message in your content is for you to actually sell trinkets and trash around your, I mean, the,
merchandising.
You know, merchandising can be quite lucrative, and it's another potential audience, and also potentially some other licensing of content or product line extensions or something like that. Those are good ways to incrementally or alternatively monetize your content.
Maybe I should make some Daisy Whitney t-shirts.
Yeah,
I think you should. I would buy one.
You know, I'm getting Daisy t-shirts for all of you.
Yay, we want them.
I mean, that's the formula, you know, for media, for Viz. I mean, I do all the licensing there for the U.S. and Latin America. And, you know, it's get it on television, and then the licensing program follows. So get the media out there. And the nice thing about today, though, is you can license products, t-shirts, hats, toys, whatever you want, with very little to no investment.
Yeah.
You know, go work with a Zazzle or a
Cafe Press.
Or a Cafe Press, and you can get stuff out there and make money on it. And as long as you find ways to drive your fans to it from the content, it's not too hard to do.
And what you're saying, David, is kind of similar to when I was at New TV, I interviewed a venture capitalist at Kane & Partners, and she said with this greater scrutiny that they'll be conducting in the year ahead, and that's not to imply that they haven't looked closely at investments in the past, but just that there'll be even more of that in the future, that one of the key things is the whole idea of multiple revenue streams. Mm-hmm. So I think for whatever it is that you're trying to do, whether it's an audio podcast or a web show or a movie or whatever it is, you have to look at all of these other options that we've talked about, so that you can be monetizing it in as many ways as possible. Now, I also, prior to going to...
Speaking of monetization.
Oh, yes.
I'd like to thank our monetizing partner today, Audible.com, which is, you know, not only are they our advertiser, I think I'm giving like half my money back. I don't think this is really working out for me at all. You know, we have... So Audible, of course, has over 50,000 books. And you know, I didn't... You know, I would search there every once in a while until they started advertising, I think, on Twit a while back. And then Leo, you know, sent me a coupon code to go buy a book. And then I bought another, and then I bought another. Do you guys, does anyone here use Audible?
Definitely.
I just started using it, actually, and enjoying it quite a bit.
I'm going to start using it after this show.
I'm going to today. I'm downloading my first book today.
Well, I always ask now. People are always asking. They're going, did you read this book? And I'm like... Is it on Audible?
Listen.
Yeah, is it on Audible? And they're like, no, it's not yet. And I'm like, it doesn't really exist yet. I mean, it doesn't, you know, I like the new Malcolm Gladstone or whatever, Gladwell book is out tomorrow, I guess. And of course, it's on Audible. I don't think I'd spend the time reading a book like that, but I'd love to listen
You'll
to
listen
it.
You'll listen to it?
On the way to Petaluma.
You don't read, though. You have to have it in that format.
You know, I read magazines, but anything that's longer than a two-page Economist article.
Sure.
I mean, I'll read Foreign Affairs, but only because it's big words. You know, if you open up Foreign Affairs is really a pamphlet, like a really, really thin magazine, but it comes out thick because it's big words, because old people read it.
So what are you listening to now, Alex, via Audible?
The thing that I am listening to, I got to pull up.
Is it still
iPhones.
Africa Rising, or have you moved on? Did you finish
no, I'm
the
still
book?
On Africa Rising. Okay. I'm still finishing up. I got a lot of good responses on the things I learned from women who dumped me.
Oh,
so
that's
I suggested that. And I'm just going to suggest it again because a lot of people Twittered me going, wow, that was a really, really, really good book.
I should have read that.
It's I've been dumped fairly often, so I'm trying to keep it down to the past.
You've
been dumped as many times as I've been canceled, which is a staggering number of times.
An oddly similar. Anyway, if you're interested in that or any of the other many books at Audible, you can go to audiblepodcast.com/twim.
There you go.
Let's check it out.
So in addition to New TV, earlier in the week, I went to Boston for the CTAM conference. Now, that's the Cable and Television Association of Marketers.
Big media.
Big media. Yeah, it's all big media patting themselves on the back.
Did they have sushi?
Those bastards. No, I don't think there was sushi.
They're not really big media until they have sushi.
Really? You have to serve sushi at a conference to be big media? Attendance was down, though, not surprisingly. It was, I don't know, it was around 2,100 the year before. I think it had
they
been
cut the sushi.
2,400. Yeah, it's all because of the sushi. People,
chicken wings.
People didn't go because there wasn't sushi there. Anyway, one of the things I thought was interesting and useful to our listenership is now, a Time Warner cable executive talked about a project that Time Warner is working on. And granted, it's not ready yet. It's in trials and all of that. But Time Warner has a goal of essentially replicating its on-air cable service online. So obviously we have Hulu, we have ABC.com, so on and so forth online. You can get your shows that way. But the goal with this is to essentially, it would be like a mirror. I mean, you'd be taking the entire lineup of Time Warner's channels, and you'd have to be a Time Warner paying customer. So say you're in New York City or Los Angeles or wherever Time Warner's markets are. So if you want to watch your shows online, you could do it all via a portal or whatever. And there are lots of specifics that have to be worked out. You know, the contracts have to be done with all of the networks. There has to be authentication and all of that. But I think it brings up a couple interesting points. And again, this is a project that's going to take a few years. It's a cable operator trying to stem the tide of defections. And how many customers do you actually prevent from leaving by offering the same service online? And does it actually prevent people like us who are just like, I'm done with cable. I'm not going back regardless.
I was just looking at internet connectivity. For $149 in Petaluma, I can get 50 megabits per second down. Burst, but still plenty to watch, you know, TV quality video. You know, to, you know, as far as download goes. And I have no interest, you know, it's like there's cable packages and I was like, I just want to unwrap that cable package because I don't need the stations. You know,
I think if you can figure out how to go on your Time Warner through your Time Warner service and watch content online, you can figure out how to get all of those same shows elsewhere.
Right. Yeah. And by the time Time Warner has this finally rolled out to all of its customers, if they're indeed able to do it, we're talking probably 2 to 3 years down the road, who's not going to know how to access Hulu or ABC.com? Now, Susan, do you still have traditional cable service? I'm guessing. I think
I do.
So, under what circumstances, and you're in the Bay Area, so Time Warner's not an option, but this is sort of a hypothetical conversation anyway. Under what circumstances would you get rid of it and just be internet only and watch TV online?
I'm being used as the average female consumer here, and I appreciate that because I really am one. The thing is that I have a double E living in my home. He's my husband, and he has to hook all this stuff up, but he's busy. And so I think we still have cable mostly because it's just too confusing to hook all that stuff up and get connectivity to the right places and watch it over some device.
Your husband's an engineer.
Double E MBA.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, he could figure all that stuff out, but there is that path of least resistance. So we have to remember that in general, people are busy. There's already something that works in your home. And if, in fact, you wanted to time shift and go look at something on the internet, you probably could. But for the most part, I think there's still a lot of ease of use with the way the system works now.
Well, I think that part of it is people getting used to it. I mean, like if once you get used to not flicking through channels, you don't really stop thinking about it.
Right.
You know, you start going, like last night I wanted to watch, Eli Stone. You know, I don't know when Eli Stone comes. Eli Stone, by the way, is really good.
I don't even know.
Yeah, I haven't heard of it. I always hear all my best stuff when I come here.
So, what network is?
I don't know.
See?
I don't know who makes Eli Stone. All I know is I go to iTunes, I pay $2.99, I get an HD download. Mm-hmm. You know, so the thing is but, and we have this little pot, and I have this pot in my head of $80, which is what my, you know,
$80
a month.
Oh, is that like you see, like that's how much you'll spend on it?
I'm not, $80 is what I'm not spending on cable. So I don't really care about paying $3 or $2 or whatever for a show because I'm not, you know, that's, you know, so I just go up to iTunes and I download it. And yesterday, you know, I downloaded them all on the Phoenix airport because it turns out the Phoenix airport has
that's pretty good connectivity.
6 megs down.
Wow.
And so it takes like 10 minutes. So if you have a long layover in Phoenix, you can like download half the internet. And so but I downloaded all these shows, but I don't know when Eli Stone comes on during the week. Mm-hmm. And I could never imagine having to go back to, I have to be somewhere at 8 o'clock on Thursday evening or Tuesday.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Amen.
You know, I mean, now that I'm used to it, now that I'm used to just watching whatever show I want to watch, whenever I feel like watching it. If I feel like watching it on the bus, you know, I can sit there and watch it on my iPhone. You know, that's the whole thing.
That's the interesting thing, I think, for media marketers to understand that it's all now, consumption is being driven by word of mouth and recommendation off television, off deck, if you will, and getting really savvy about one-to-one promotion of content. Every time I come and do a guest on This Week in Media, I leave, I write down five things, and I go check. I am now a Grey's Anatomy fanatic.
Oh my gosh, we have to talk about Denny then.
There you go, because you talk about it on Twim. So
I'm going to make you, Martin, discuss Denny now.
I don't know Denny.
Who's
but
Denny?
But I think one of the issues that happened.
Somebody, please, anybody, listeners, write to me. I need to discuss the Izzy Denny storyline with people. So anybody who watches this show, you know how to reach me, DaisyWhitney@gmail.com. I'm very into the Izzy Denny storyline, and I need to discuss it with other fans. It's my call for help. I know it's totally pathetic. Okay, whatever. Y'all look at me like that's so pathetic. I don't care. All right, I love that storyline, and I need to find other freaks like me who want to talk about it.
So, but the
does everyone else have something to say?
When we look at the whole problem with cable, getting cable to the internet, a lot of that had to do with cable providers. So the Time Warners, Comcast, so on and so forth, basically threatening that if you put your station online, I mean, Tech TV really should have been an online, in my opinion. I mean, when you look at Tech TV or ZDTV before that, that should have been online.
Sure.
You know,
because start in 1997. Yeah,
right. Absolutely. But once you got to 2002,
they could have canceled it then.
Once you got to 2002, 2003, they should have had a mirror of that, you know, online. The reason they couldn't do it, of course, is because the cable operators would go, woohoo, crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, and Tech TV was not in a leveraged position where it could say, well, we're going to do it the way we're going to do it, and you're going to deal with it, you know. And now cable, you know, with Time Warner doing it, I think we're in a much better position to, because they're the ones controlling that pipe, you know.
Yeah, I'm just not certain. Obviously, the people who listen to the show and the people who are on the show, I mean, we're the early adopter consumers. I mean, so I know that we're not normal. I mean, when I've mentioned to girlfriends of mine that I don't have cable right now, like, how does that work?
So you have satellite?
Yeah, exactly. Like, they have, no, I try to explain. I said, well, you can get a lot of shows online. Like, really? And then, of course, you know, their husbands are blaring, you know, Sunday football on their plasma screens. They can't even conceive of that. I just wonder if those consumers would even bother to say, oh gosh, I missed my show, so I'm going to go online and find it. And if you're going to go online, and you know, it brings up another point. Now, I wrote a story this morning, a very short piece, but MySpace launched, MySpace TV launched an application last week called MySpace Primetime. And essentially what it does is it lets MySpace users embed Hulu, Warner Brothers, Sony, and other, quote, premium content directly on their user profiles, which you haven't been able to do so far. But it got me to thinking, now when Hulu first launched, one of the big things about Hulu was this super syndication strategy, that you'll be able to find the Hulu shows on AOL TV, on AOL Video, on Comcast, on Yahoo, on all of these other places. Now, if you guys missed a show and you were going to watch it online, would you go to Yahoo Video or AOL, or would you go to, I just think I'd go to Hulu first.
If I wanted it free, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I buy it from iTunes just because I don't want to deal with the commercials, and I also don't want to deal with the start-stop video. I just want, you know, the problem with both Hulu and like ABC.com and everything else, I mean, I love them for what they are, but I really prefer a higher quality image to play through. My time is valuable, so I'm not filling time. Usually I'm watching things that I'm particularly interested in, and I find, you know, that I go through the in and out of a love hate relationship with Hulu. I like Hulu because there's so much available when I'm just trying to browse, and I hate it because it's low quality and it keeps on stopping.
I'm such a cheapskate now. I'm like, I love saving money on not paying for cable. I'm like, I'll watch the ads.
You
I
work
have
for
no
TV
watching.
Week. A, shouldn't they pay for it? B, isn't it a tax
exactly.
write-off anyway?
Everything is a write-off. David,
right.
What about Boxy? This is something that I installed, and what Boxy is essentially is a service that It works with your Apple TV. I mean, you can just have it directly on your Mac, but it also works with your Apple TV, and it brings Hulu and CNN.com and Comedy Central and things like that directly as an option in your Apple TV menu. Do you have an Apple TV?
I do. I have two of them, actually. One in the bedroom and one in the living room.
Wow. Wait, yeah. I have two Apple TVs?
I do.
I think Steve Jobs has two Apple TVs.
And, but, you know,
you're like a bigger geek than I thought.
Totally.
And I mean that affectionately, everyone.
I have the Netflix box. And
right, you have Roku.
And then I've
Roku.
Got my old Mac tower hooked to my television, so I can watch Hulu and Juiced, and you know, mainly I would love to consolidate all to one piece of hardware and one menu system that gives me access to all of it without having to, you know, switch inputs on the TV and then the stereo and, you know, go through all that stuff.
Susan's like, this is never happening for me.
Now, you know, like I'm on Apple TV and now I want to watch Hulu, so I've got to switch the TV to RGB input, and then I got to switch the stereo to the different audio source, and I got to get my wireless keyboard and mouse out.
That's when I just get a book.
It's great because I'm a geek and I love that stuff, but, you know, my parents come to visit and it's impossible to expect them to watch anything.
Nobody else knows how to turn it on.
So yes,
it's a great thing. I really like that. I don't like having house guests. Period. But it's great to make them like really unwanted in your house. You know, I don't know how to turn the. You're not gonna be able to figure out how to turn the TV on. You're not gonna have your own bedroom. You should just go stay at Jill's house instead. My sister-in-law. Sorry.
So I'm on the list for Boxy to try and get a.
I'll get you an invite. Anybody out there wants an invite? Just email me. Okay.
Yeah, because
I'm going to batch process them. I'm not going to process it immediately. I'm going to batch it. But seriously, I'm in the alphabet. I'll just send. I sent out a bunch over Twitter last week, so I'll get you one.
Perfect. Perfect. I want to consolidate. I mean, if I had one less box or two less set-top boxes, life would be grand.
Well, let me tell you what I think about it. It has so much potential. I love the idea of Boxy. I love the idea that, you know, in the evenings I could just, you know, kick back on my couch, turn on the Apple TV and watch, you know, The Daily Show. I've gotten into that recently. Watch Colbert Report directly on the television set, watch The Office. But it is so clunky still. And
that's why they call it a beta.
It is so incredibly difficult to use. And it's like, you've got the tiny little Apple remote, right? So you just keep hitting these buttons over. And it's like, wait, is anything happening? And it says on, you know, a 10-second delay or whatever. So I don't think it's there yet. But I think it's worth talking about and kind of keeping on our radar screens. Because if Boxy can get all of this stuff worked out and have it really be smooth, because it's not yet, I think the potential is terrific. And it goes back to something that John Flowers, you know, he talked about this several episodes ago. I think it was back in the spring when he said iTunes is marijuana and Hulu is crack. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
I talked about that afterwards. Like, it's just, we want to marry the two a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I think when you really can bring the two together, that's when sort of having this broadband-powered viewing experience really can start to work much better.
Well, I think the interface is important. I know my wife gets very frustrated with Hulu and ABC.com because it's some kind of web interface. She wants to sit back and use the little controller. And that's why she likes a lot of stuff filled up on the you know, we use a Mac Mini. We don't have the Apple TV, but a Mac Mini full of, you know, hundreds of movies and lots of music and you know, all of that stuff is kind of there. And that's all she really wants to deal with.
Well, now that I don't have internet superstar, it's just no reason for me to turn on the Apple TV. So I want to talk about Martin, make a show, please.
Sounds like
you
soon
and all of America.
Right, we're all clamoring. For it. So I want to shift gears for a second and talk about Twitter and social marketing. Mm-hmm. Now, there was really, I have an interesting Twitter example to share with you, but before I get to it, and it was sort of a personal experience I had with a company, there was some interesting stuff going on this weekend, and I asked Susan to look into it. There was kind of like a Twitter controversy over a Motrin ad. Yeah. Susan, explain that.
It was a firestorm. Here's what happened. Very innocently, the McNeil Corporation put out a couple of new television commercials, one of which showed a mother with a baby in a snuggly and talking about how that could give you pain for carrying around your baby and that Motrin was there to support you as a mom. But this whole notion of baby wearing and the moms, some of the moms objected to. These were kind of mommy bloggers and mommy Twitterers who objected to this commercial. They didn't like the setup. They didn't feel like they were clearly identified with as mothers. They didn't feel like it was appropriate. And so they started Twittering. Then they started blogging. And the back. sad part was that Taxi, the advertising agency that works with McNeil to put together these Motrin ads, they weren't online over the weekend when this firestorm erupted. And so a lot of negative publicity happened because they didn't have some online reputation management system using keywords about their brand, and they weren't checking email, and so they didn't get either their Google alert or their tracker alert or their Nielsen Buzz Metrics alerts or whatever it might be. And I think ultimately what happens is that there's now all of these channels, all of these conversational channels on the internet that marketers have to watch 24/7. It's like your sysadmin who always carries a pager, so if the servers go down, you're immediately notified. Marketers are now, they've got to be tethered to their online reputation management software, whatever that is, so that they can immediately go in. And I don't know whether the site was down because everybody was hammering it to look at the commercial or whether they pulled the site down. But there were just no people around for comment fast enough in this 24/7 world.
What do you learn from that? What do we learn from that or take away from that? Either as a big marketer, because certainly we have those folks listening to our show, but also just as individuals who are producing content, if there is kind of that, you know, very quick negative reaction, what's the takeaway?
Well, there's a couple things. Number one, you always say, here's an apology. Here's what we're going to do to fix it, which McNeil did. Ultimately, the VP of marketing came online. She put on a statement. She explained what they were going to do. They took down the commercial. It's going to take a while for it to all cancel out through their media purchases, right? But they said, okay, we get it. This didn't land right. We were off on this commercial. It happens a lot. It's just that now the takeaway is you absolutely have to have an online reputation tracking system, and you have to have someone who owns it 24/7 if you're producing content or putting out messages as a corporation.
Now, I want to share my sort of positive Twitter story because this really impressed me and engendered brand loyalty. So I was in, some of you who follow me on Twitter, you know, sort of heard parts of this already. So, you know, fast forward or whatever, or listen to it again. But I was in New York on election day, voted by mail, of course, but I had to moderate a panel at AdTech, and I was flying home that night. So earlier in the day, I was Twittering with some other people like, oh, I'm flying home. We'll make sure you're able to watch election returns on the plane. I said, well, I will be because I'm going to be flying JetBlue. JetBlue has, as most of you know, has the satellite TV in on its seat backs. So a minute later, I see a Twitter email that I'm now being followed by JetBlue. I'm like, oh my gosh, that was really fast and really impressive. So then I posted another Twitter saying like, well, I'm actually, as a matter of fact, I'm going to be writing a story for TV Week about the experience of, you know, what that is going to be like watching election returns in kind of this collective environment on the plane. And then about 5 minutes later, I get an email directly from the PR person saying, hey, wanted to introduce myself. I see that you're going to be doing a story. If there's anything I can do to help, let me know. Also, if you would like to tell me what flight you're on.
I'll make sure you have good service.
He said, no.
We'll make sure the satellite's on for that one.
He said that JetBlue has a couple of planes in its fleet called Beta Blue that are actually wireless enabled. So he said, I usually with a couple of days notice, I can have them, you know, switch and make sure.
They're going to switch planes for you.
They were going to switch planes. I mean, it didn't actually happen, but because it was 5 hours before my flight, but he put in the request to see if they could have the Beta Blue flight that has the wireless access so that I could Twitter. That was his thinking. I'm not going to, it's the wireless on a plane isn't powerful enough for you to watch internet video. I wasn't going to do that. But the whole point was if you want to keep Twittering while you're watching this, I'll have this. And, you know, so obviously it didn't work out. But even so, I was just so impressed with that kind of response. And yes, I'm a reporter, and it's nice that people are nice to you because you're a reporter and because you have the potential of saying either positive or negative things about their company. But it was just one of those moments. I flew United the next week, which just sucked. Mm-hmm. And I was impressed that here's a company that is actively monitoring what's being said. I mean, within minutes, what's being said on Twitter.
I've got a couple of those.
And reaching out. I think that's impressive. And I think the companies that do that deserve...
Yeah.
Kudos if they're
good. Well, it's not even that hard because it's just a search. You know, it's you just see things coming up. You know, I Twittered some complaint about Comcast. Of course, now I'm going to buy from them. So, but
did they respond?
Like within minutes. I mean, I had some guy from Comcast Cares, you know, popped up and was like, this isn't the way we usually focus on it, and this is only a small. Oh, I was complaining about how Comcast was evil because of the capping, you know, of bandwidth, and specifically for BitTorrent. And he explained it in more detail, you know, but I thought it was very aggressive, you know, and very good.
Did that change how you think about Comcast at all?
It softened my...
Okay. There are two big concerns I have about this whole Twitter back channel. One is that it's going to foster negativity around brands because people are going to start saying, oh, you know, JetBlue made me mad, Comcast made me mad, and you're going to hear all this stuff coming through Twitter, when in reality, what I hope it does is a forcing equation that allows marketers to put a place up that consumers can go to complain and to do a much better job of that brand by brand by brand, so that Twitter doesn't become that kind of negativity spiral back channel. Worries me.
The number one trending topic right now on Surmise, the Twitter search, is Motrin.
Wow.
Interesting.
See? I'm not using Motrin anymore. Actually, I don't care.
Well, you know, one thing we were
talking about. But I did wear my baby when I had a baby. Let me tell you. I used the baby Bjorn until he was 18 months old. That's why I'm so strong right now. Anyway.
Well, the one thing that we were talking about a little bit on Twit last night was the idea of what the president's going to do.
And there was a great New York Times article about how they're going to take his BlackBerry away.
But what I think is more interesting, though, is what he could do as far as, you know, he's got the most Twitter followers, you know, out there. If he started really Twittering, and it doesn't even have to be him.
Right, we know it's not,
some
but who cares? Yeah.
Who's going, but if we got stuff like, and I think I tweeted this, but if we got stuff like, I'm, you know, going into a meeting with Putin, wish me luck. You know, like,
how cool would that be?
People would be like,
I would love
you know, like
that.
They would just be sitting there listening to every, you know, and it once a day, twice a day, you know, of some assistant like saying it as Barack or showing Barack, like showing him, this is what I'm going to Twitter. And he goes, okay. And then boom, and they hit it. Or he can write him and have someone vet him or whatever. You know, so it's,
right.
You got to be careful of what you're saying as the president. You know,
you
don't want to say
that?
Launching missiles against Libya, you know, before they hit, you know, so, but the point is that he would have 3, 4, maybe even 10 million followers sitting there just following him. The press would follow him because that would be probably the fastest way for them to know what's going on in a lot of ways. And it allows the president to take control of his message. And this is what I think using blogs, video podcasts, audio podcasts, Twittering, those types of things, it allows individuals and corporations and politicians, when they're used effectively, to, in some ways, I mean, you still interact with the general press, but you can really undermine the amount of power that they have over directly contacting people. And more importantly, it builds up this group of people who have an intimate relationship. If you were Twittering once or twice a day as the president of the United States, people would follow you because you're the president of the United States.
Twitter expands. Twitter gets bigger.
Well, but not only that, it means that when you say, call your representative...
People do.
Instantly.
That's a really good
point. You're talking about, you know, you can shut Congress down with one Twitter.
Uh-huh.
You know, and those are the, you know, that's the kind of stuff that is, you know, that he would be poised to do. I don't know whether he will or not, but I think it's a huge opportunity lost.
Do we want to speculate? What do you think, Martin?
I'm just heartened that Barack Obama finally passed Kevin Rose for most Twitter followers. USA.
All right, so we've got some progress there. So one more topic before we sign off. Now, eMarketer had an interesting white paper on 7 strategies for success in a down economy. And, you know, yes, I'm going to keep talking about how we can continue to thrive in the midst of the economy. So that's just to, you know, be prepared. That's a topic that I think is really important and I think is going to be beneficial for everyone now, frankly. So I'm just going to rattle off what some of these are, and we don't have to dig into every single one, but the strategies all relate around embracing internet marketing because the internet is more measurable. Advertisers should embrace its accountability. One of the other strategies is that search marketing will be more vital than ever because it generates a direct response and a return on investment, but it should be coupled with online branding to create product awareness. Another tip is that marketers should keep in close contact with their consumers, especially at times like this. And this is very simple, but something we should all think about. One of the best ways to do that is email. It's inexpensive and efficient marketing channel. Another topic was building trust through good customer service. And don't forget online online video. That was another thing eMarketer said. Marketers should bring their video content to the web, such as promotional films, sales demos, and customer testimonials. Of course, this is what Alex talks about all the time, that this should all be online.
I fully agree.
Now, Susan had the chance to, again, she's doing her homework, which I love. Everyone does their homework. There's not really any homework. I'm just kidding. Susan actually spoke with Jeff Ramsey, the CEO of eMarketer, specifically about this. So share some of that with our listeners.
Yeah, I called him up this morning, and I wanted to find out, you know, I saw him present the Ramsey report and these seven positive psychology, here's why the world isn't going, you know, falling apart, and why online advertising and marketing do stand to gain in a down economy. And I said, what's the net? What is the feedback you've gotten since you've done this Ramsey report? You know, do people believe you? Did they think you were a Pollyanna? He said two things. Number one, he thinks it's just he's lobbing the first grenade into the snake pit of negative media. And he thinks it's incumbent upon all of the rest of us to keep a positive outlook about the upside opportunity for our technology and internet advertising to continue to not only do well, but to take share from traditional media, especially in a downtime. But the thing he said that resonated most with the people who heard him, both marketers, publishers, and all of his constituents in the media space, he said it was keeping yourself close to your customer. Using internet technology, and it goes exactly to what Alex was just talking about with Obama. If Obama were a Twitterer, well, you know, maybe he won't. But as brands, we can use all these technologies, blogging, video, Twittering, to stay connected directly to our customer. And he says that's the number one thing of all his advice that resonated with the most people and got the most positive feedback.
Staying close to the consumer.
Stay connected with your customer and use internet technology to do it.
Okay, so how do you do that, Alex? Give an example.
How do I do it?
Yeah, how would you? I mean, thinking about that, I mean, I'm just kind of throwing this question out right now. I didn't ask anyone to prepare for this.
But or how
if
people
you were,
around us, or how do
were,
I do
no,
it?
No, if you were specifically to stay, you know, connected to your customers, consumers, whatever it is, in the months ahead, what would that mean for you?
Well, I mean, we have different types of customers. The shows that we do, in a lot of ways, keep a lot of contact. I mean, a lot of our customers are watching our shows. So we produce a lot of shows and on all kinds of different areas around the industry. And we're going to produce more next year rather than less. We'll probably double or triple the number of shows we're doing in 2009 than what we're doing now. And that... yes. We will talk about that later. So that's the biggest way we do it. I mean, we don't market ourselves as much as we create content, knowing that content is going to grab a huge bucket, and some people will be interested in what we do.
So, Martin, how do you keep in touch with your consumers, you know, how important is that to you right now?
Well, it should be a lot more important than it is, and I'm doing a really bad job of it. But if I mean,
wag of the finger,
it's
to
terrible.
You
know, I use Twitter. I respond to every email I get, but what I should be doing is updating my blog a lot more, appearing on a lot more shows like this, using Ustream, using Seismic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Keeping in contact with the fans, with the viewers as much as possible.
Okay,
I mean,
so Martin,
they will forget.
Martin, how about you do a daily blog? How about you just commit to that right now? How about that? You commit to updating Sarge World with something. It could be one sentence. You could do a one sentence update. How about you commit to that here on TWIM?
Kind of on a little drinking jug right now, Daisy. Yeah, okay, I'll
commit
do it. I'm committing.
All right, Sarge World every day. Well, damn. You know, 5 days a week, see? See, I always get myself into some. Well, last time you were here, I got you Obama girl, so.
You.
So now I got you
which
committed.
Which never aired.
I'm so disappointed. Are we going to get that?
I'm hoping that Next New Network's
will they be able to carry
political.
It?
I finally got them the file.
Okay.
So hopefully they'll be able to post it. But it's barely relevant anymore because it was taped before the election.
That's true. So. She's president girl now. David.
Interesting comment about the economy. When you talk to people and you see people are cutting back expenses here and there, the one thing they're not going to cancel is their internet connection. They'll like cut back. They'll go like, okay, I'm going to get rid of HBO and Cinemax and Showtime and stream my cable line, but I can't afford to lose my internet connection. So, you know, I think that moving a lot of the content there and where they view things is going to just naturally happen as the economy does what it does. You know, at Viz, we're embracing that wholeheartedly. One of the things we actually announced today, of all days, is one of our biggest properties, Naruto, we're going to completely redo the website and stream all of the new episodes online, along with Hulu and Juiced. And around that in many stages build a community that allows us to interact with our audience, which we've never really been good at. We've thrown the content out there and the fans have gone and done their things on forums and blogs and everything else, but we've never engaged as part of that and been, you know, joined that conversation, I guess. And we're starting to do that and figure out how important that is. The interesting thing about it is one of our unique challenges is because the content we carry has been out in Japan for a year, two, 3 years, part of this new strategy is unprecedented for us because by April with this series, we'll have caught up to the Japanese broadcast. And we'll be within a week of that new episode airing in Japan, which we think is going to be an interesting learning experience from us just from a piracy angle, from a fan perspective, all of those things. So, you know, we've really as a company looked at the web is the future for, you know, the bulk of our content and our interaction with our consumers, and that, you know, the retail stores and broadcast television and all of those things, you have to have that, but it's in it right now, those are actually, you know, what drives your revenue, but the future is moving this direction and we're trying to invest in it now.
And Susan?
I have a fan club.
Oh, that's right. You
I really do. I have
it's
so
on Facebook,
my weekly
right?
show, Dishy Mix. I have a fan club, and you just go to dishymixfan.com. It takes you to Facebook, and I give away swag like it's going out of style. I give away Hoopla cycling jerseys from Crispin Porter Boguski and Pete Blackshaw's book Tell 3000 and John Zogby's report on the transformation of the American dream. And basically, if a guest comes on my show, I hit them up for swag. So I'm always giving stuff away to my fans, anything I have. And
that keeps you close to the consumer.
It does. It keeps me connected with people who actually want to fan me. And, you know, I struggled with it. Obviously, you worry, oh, my God, are you an egomaniac because you have a fan club? But you know what? I have a show and I have fans and they like it and everybody loves swag. So that's one of the millions of things I do. But I actually seek the connective tissue between all of the social networks and try to figure out how I can create once and distribute many through the interlocking mechanisms. I've got some secret patented formulas on that I can't really share, but I figured them out.
I'll take you out for a drink. I'll get you to share that with me. I'll get everyone to break down eventually and tell me all of their secrets.
Yeah,
and as for me, staying in touch with consumers, it's all about discussing Denny right now.
And Twitter.
I'll have my wife call you. She's a big fan.
Yeah, my girlfriend too.
All right. I'm going to start that now.
Check out her site,
demogirl.com. I'm holding out. I'm already addicted to too many shows. I have two shows that are on the pipe.
It's a very surreal storyline. That's all I'm going to say. Alex, where can people find you?
The Twitter.
Alex Lindsay.
All one word. With an A.
Sarge World, Martin.
SargeWorld.com. Guys are going to be updating
daily
every day now.
Updates.
Twitter.com/MartinSarge.
As soon as we leave, I'm Twittering that Martin is updating SargeWorld every day.
All right. Yes. I should be doing
that. He gets mad at me. All I do is help. David, where can people find you?
You can find me personally on Twitter. And for Viz Media, just go to viz.com and it leads to all of our different websites.
And Susan, what's your super secret location?
Super secret is personallifemedia.com or dishymix.com.
And you should all go to tvweek.com and read my stories. We're over and out.